This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
So I say things occasionally that make people angry. I guess that's just part of doing television and radio for a living. It's no big deal, but there's one thing I say that makes people angry a lot. People on our side. I'm not talking about the communists. I don't care about them. But I'll say it again, and I really genuinely mean it. We need the Democrat Party to reform. Now, when I say it, I get responses like, who cares about them? Or, no, we just have to defeat them. And okay, I understand the sentiment. I really genuinely do. But as I've said many times before, I love my country. My interest is not in republicanism. My interest is in the United States of America growing and prospering and being here for my grandkids and their grandkids and their grandkids after them. That's how much I love my country. I am interested in this country lasting 500 more years, 1,000 more years. That's what I want. And because I want that, I want the Democrat Party to reform, because the United States of America cannot survive unless it does. What this modern Democrat Party is, there's always been differences between Republicans and Democrats. I acknowledge that. I'm not naive. But for the longest time, there was at least a strain of patriotism inside of both parties. Right? And the Republican Party, as much as I rag on them, as much as I scream about them, at least they're not openly, nakedly trying to burn the country down. We cannot survive for my grandkids' grandkids. We can't survive another 500 years if one of the two major political parties just wants to burn the place down. When you think about it, just think about the campaign they just ran, actually. Just had that big election. Think about the campaign they ran. Think about the main issue you heard them pound over and over and over again. We're talking about America, the people, the border, how people are living, and this is all we got from Democrats?
What is the greatest national security threat to the United States? It's Donald Trump.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
Donald Trump cannot be president again. He's an existential threat to democracy.
Look, are they a threat to democracy? Yes. Are they going to take our rights away? Yes. Are they going to put people's lives in danger? Yes.
We have to defeat a person who is a threat to our democracy of the kind that we have not seen.
Trump is an enemy of the United States.
Having Trump not only have had the codes, but now having the classified information for Americans and being able to put that out and share it in his resort with anyone and everyone who comes through should be terrifying to all Americans, mm-hmm. and he needs to be stopped.
MAGA in general, they are threats to us domestically.
He is destructive to our democracy, and he has to be eliminated.
They're not about anything. Certainly not about you, anything you care about at all. It's all these anti-Trump political phrases that don't really mean anything, threat to democracy. And we remember, we should not forget how they just governed. For 4 years, those savages tore through this country as fast as they could, threw the border open, brought as many rapists into the country as they could, handed out trillions of dollars to their communist friends domestically and foreign-wise. And it doesn't matter how good, how well Trump does for the next 4 years, he can't put together everything they destroyed in four, because you cannot build as fast as you can destroy. The Democrat Party right now is flailing and they're lost, and we should be happy about that. We're going to talk about the why a lot tonight. But just know, on the back end of that, we need them to change. I'm never going to be a Democrat, but we can't have this without end. We can't have every time they take over the burning of America. We simply can't. But the good news is they are on the outs. The American people watched with horror at what they did for 4 years, and they rejected them firmly at the ballot box. Are they going to wake up? Are they going to recover? Are they about to turn things around? We'll talk about that tonight, and all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a great show for you. Hang on.
Who do you see in the Democratic Party as a possibility for 28? Because as we know, these dates come at us faster than they sometimes anticipate.
It's deep. And look, I'm going to say it. I'm biased towards the governors, and there's a bunch of them out there doing the work. But look, there's people that I'm unabashed. I'm a big fan of Pete Buttigieg. I think he talks about it. I don't know what Vice President Harris is going to do, but I think she's got a lot to offer folks.
Would you run for president?
Well, I had a friend tell me never turn down a job you haven't been offered. If I think I could offer something, or if there's a piece there that would do it, I would certainly consider that. I'm also, though, not arrogant enough to believe there's a lot of people that can do this. And by the time we get to 2028, what that skill set to do it looks like, we need to coalesce behind that person, whoever it is. And so I'll, you know, if it would be that might have the skill set, I'll do it.
I'm dumbfounded. I can't figure out how they came apart so quickly. I mean, when you think back to Barack Obama, like I already said, they had it all, and now it's Buttigieg and Dome again. Joining me now, Jeffrey Tucker, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey, look, obviously I'm very biased. I'm a partisan. I'm not a journalist. I'm an extremely biased person. So I'm always going to look on in horror at the potential field of the other side. But they're just not popular. I mean, no matter what my thoughts are, love them or hate them, I mean, I guess maybe Shapiro or somebody, what happened to them after Barack Obama?
Something, well, I think the major thing is that the deep state was exposed. The administrative deep state was exposed, and the DNC was revealed as nothing other than a cosmetic sort of veneer for it. And that would explain everything that's happened essentially over the last 5 years, if not longer. And it's a little bit shocking to suddenly realize that one of the political parties in America is nothing other than a mouthpiece for unfireable bureaucrats, you know, deep corporate interests, all the sort of permanent stakeholders of the entire ruling class of the American, if not global regime, are residing within the DNC. And that's a shocking thing. We like to think of our political parties as independent and loyal to their voters, but that apparently is not true with the DNC. And so something that's going to have to happen to fix this party up, because the word is out. I mean, like, we're no longer confused about this. I just want to remind you that it was just not even 2 years ago, or maybe it was much sooner than that, that RFK decided that he would throw his hat into the ring and expected that maybe the Democrat grassroots would support him to replace Biden. I mean, that was the original idea of his campaign when he ran, because he was under the impression that many, many Democrats would favor his political priorities of giving government back to the people and cleaning up the public spaces and that sort of thing. That was his theory. And it was earnest. I mean, he thought, well, we'll have an open primary, and then I'll compete, you know, as politics always are, and we'll get rid of this crazy crowd that's taken over the DNC. That it was an earnest effort on his part, but of course, he very quickly realized, within a few weeks of having declared, that there would be no open primary, that there was a cartel that ran the party, that he could never reach the base. The base would be disempowered. They would never have a chance to vote for him at all. The fix was in, you know, from the very beginning. And that was a little bit heartbreaking to him, I would say, as a sort of scion of a long political family that had the most prominent family in the history of the Democratic Party in the United States, to suddenly find himself completely excluded, not even considered. And then they put in Biden. So it broke his heart in some ways, but he decided to go independent because that was the only option he had. That's what we're dealing with the DNC. He didn't know that even 2 years ago, but it's become very obvious. And what he discovered, the whole of the American public has discovered. So we'll see if there's a future for this party or not. You know, what could happen, it strikes me, Jesse, is that in the same way that the Republican Party was sort of taken over by renegades and insurgents you know, through the Trump efforts. Maybe something like that could happen to the Democrats too, but we're not seeing any signs of it yet.
No, we're certainly not. And I hate to pick on Tim Walz. Actually, take that back. I love to pick on Tim Walz, but I'm going to use him again because I want to ask you a question after we watch this. Here he was.
The most sacred right under the United States democracy is the First Amendment. You yourself have said there's no First Amendment right to misinformation. Kamala Harris wants to use the power of government and big tech to silence people from speaking their minds. That is a threat to democracy that will long outlive this present political moment.
You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That's the test. That's the Supreme Court test.
Tim, fire in a crowded theater. You guys wanted to kick people off of Facebook for saying that toddlers shouldn't
wear
masks.
Senator, the governor does
have
the floor.
Fire in a crowded theater. That is criticizing the policies of the government, which is the right of every American.
Is it their tyranny that doomed them to? Now, that's the thing that bothers me. I know that's the thing that bothers you. You and I have spoken many times, but for the normal American who actually decides elections, I fully acknowledge it's not me, it's not you, it's them. Is it the tyranny that turned them off? Because they really did. I mean, the mask slipped really quickly.
You know, it wasn't too many years ago when there were a lot of rebels and renegades and resistance types, people who didn't trust elites, who hated war, hated censorship. They were all part of the Democratic Party. But now, all these people have migrated over. We really need to understand the structure of the new Republican Party. Mostly of all the leadership consists of former Democrats, people who had values of civil liberties and free speech and the rights of the people against the ruling class and so on. They were once part of the Democratic Party. Now, they're all in the Republican Party, and a lot of the old Republican Party regulars are gone and disappearing, leaving the Democrats with just people who are just sort of strangely regime loyal, people who are glad to rent out their bodies and their mouths to others. On X, there's been all sorts of posts about something like 22 Democratic senators reading from the same script, the identical words as a pre-response to Trump's address. And it's just incredible. You know, Elon was asking, you know, who wrote this? And we don't know. In fact, he offered a Tesla, right, to find out who wrote these things. So that's what we're dealing with the Democrats. And they're going to have to get new leadership if they expect to compete. And I believe, I'm sure you do also, I would like to have a competitive democracy in this country, you know, where we have two earnest parties battling out over fundamental policy ideas. But that's not what's going on. We have one party that represents the managerial state class and the ruling class and the largest corporations and the deep state and all the embedded interests that drive us all nuts. And then another party that consists of a renegade group that are sick of the status quo, and they're looking for change, and they themselves are fighting an internal battle against the old guard. So that's the way America, from my point of view, that's where American politics is today. But I don't see a future for people like Tim Walz or, you know, God forbid, Kamala Harris or the rest of these types, Buttigieg and they're the old guard, and something has to disrupt this party if they're going to have any kind of political viability in the future, I would think.
Jeffrey, I had somebody very smart say to me that they could see a real true outsider, like this man type, like a Jamie Dimon type. It doesn't have to be that, but a Jamie Dimon type come in and really kind of, it's a fresh face, doesn't come in with any baggage, pull together this nutball coalition of Democrats. Could you see that?
You know, maybe, but you know, you got to think back to 2015 when Trump did this to the Republican Party and the strange circumstances that were there. I mean, there were 8 or 10 Republicans that were vying for the nomination. He wiped them out one by one, thanks to the public debates, and it was a total humiliation for everybody, you know, just one by one, and he eventually captured the nomination. But even that wasn't enough. He became president, but not really, you know. I mean, Still, a lot of people were skeptical. They excluded him. They tricked him. They used lawfare. And even within the Republican Party, the people that were against Trump in 2016 and following, were a lot of them were just Republicans. So those were very unusual historical circumstances, and Trump is an unusual kind of person. Is somebody like that going to rise up within the Democratic Party? Maybe, but it would have to require a big open primary, big vigorous debates, and a lot of courage to take on the interests that are running this party, which, as I say, are the most powerful people in America at some level. It's just funny to me that you have, you know, the very powerful corporate interests, the entirety of the civil service, all the labor unions, educational unions, and so on, all backing the Democrats. You know, the World Economic Forum, George Soros, all the rest of it. And yet, they're just politically not viable because they're, you know, the marionettes that they've assigned to do the job of getting them elected are falling down on that job. So that's an awkward situation to be in.
No, it is. How much credit do you give the rise of social media? And as I've said many times, I realize all the evils people can credit social media with, and I acknowledge that as well, but there's good and bad to everything. The fact that so many Americans, and it's not just young people anymore. I mean, shoot, my in-laws, you know, they're on social media. They don't watch the news anymore. They get their news from Twitter, from Facebook, from something like that. Did the death of the mainstream media really, really give maybe a mortal wound to the modern Democrat Party?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Of course, we're in the thick of this kind of revolution, and all of us are trying to understand it. A lot of times it's difficult to understand it, but the White House Correspondents Association that recently just got booted out of its cartelized position at the White House to make room for people like you and others from the independent media, it turns out they had been in control of the American media since 1914. And that's a really interesting long track record in which the sort of regime priorities merged fully with the mainstream media. That's been going on for 110 years, right? So we're now newly, very newly, introduced into a world of a free information space and finding out things that we never knew before. I mean, I know you live like this. Every day I'm just astounded about what I didn't know and what I'm learning, you know? It's rather amazing. And what the political implications of that, in particular, I would single out X here, because it's not through Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram that you're learning the truth about the world. We all know that it's through X. And what's that going to do politically to this country? So far, it's been very dramatic. There seems to be an emergent and very interesting new relationship that's going on between the elected government under Trump and the base, the people. We see it playing itself out, you know, every day, where Trump and MAGA and MAHA and Doge are very sensitive to the vox populi, right? The voice of the people. And X is that voice of the people. You know, it's just a fact that we've not had this operationally relevant in American politics probably for more than a century. So I think you could be right. This may be fundamentally disruptive. I feel like we're all trying to figure it out, but it does seem like a different time and a different situation we're all finding ourselves in, where the relationship between the government and the people may never be the same, thanks mostly to Elon's acquisition of X. But that's providing competition for the other platforms. So everything could change as a result, in part, of social media. I agree with you.
Jeffrey, as always, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you. All right. You want to talk to a former Democrat? We'll see what she thinks next. I just want you to know, as we bring Jennifer Gilardi in, visiting fellow with the Independent Women's Forum, I want you to know that video you just saw is real. On My Life, we did not like edit something there or just do something goofy. That's real. And so, Jennifer, maybe, look, you're obviously, by the grace of God, a former person, a former Democrat. Can you help me understand what I'm missing? Because I don't understand it, and I want to understand. Help me understand, please.
I wish I could, but I think even in my darkest moments, Jesse, that was not acceptable. I've done some pretty cringy things, I have to admit. I've tried to scrub the internet of some of them. I leave some of them up to remind me of how far I've come and how much, how my sanity has been restored and my true joy. But that is really like, every time I see it, I laugh. And actually seeing it not through my own screen, but just through this made me laugh even more. I don't know why, but I can't get over how silly this is and how I actually think that they're moving the needle. I don't get it, but I like I said last time to you, I hope they keep going in that direction because that will only mean more wins for us for years and years to come.
Doesn't it seem like they're losing their minds quickly? And that's kind of like the central theme of things here. I realize they're bottomed out, and sometimes your party, whether you're Democrat or Republican, you bottom out, you lose an election, you don't have any power, and you go back to the drawing board. This doesn't work, let's focus on this. But it seems like they went from having kind of everything to just complete, their brains just fell out on the table. And I don't understand how it came apart so quickly. Is it maybe this is crazy, is it Pelosi kind of getting too old and retiring? Maybe that old witch was kind of keeping all the cats herded in, and now that she's too old and tired and her dentures are falling out, she can't, and they're just running?
I don't know, but what I was just thinking about is our very first conversation, and the reason you had me on is that you said, like, leftism is a mental disorder. And in a way, I don't want to like overgeneralize, but there are some certain modes of thinking that really makes you think the behavior in that type of video is appealing and is sensible, particularly coming out of politicians. Like, I get it, we're all a little silly, but have some like modest decorum about yourself and some standard of what you will and will not put out there. So maybe Pelosi was just holding all the crazies together. We do see a younger and younger shift of the who the leading voices in the Democratic Party are. They're increasingly women, they're increasingly young, and they're increasingly not good. I will give AOC credit. She really knows how to use the internet. She knows how to use the socials. A lot of the Democrat Party does not. And actually, I don't know if you wanted, I think you wanted to talk about this anyways, but Charlie Kirk talked about that in the first podcast of Gavin Newsom. He had Charlie Kirk on. It was glorious.
Yeah, it is. It's wild. And maybe there's something there that about the young women thing, because everybody who's ever talked to a young woman or been one knows young women can easily be really, really insane and impossible to be around. And maybe that explains it, that they've taken over. Instead of being on the sidelines, you know, Jasmine Crockett, instead of being some backbencher, now she is a leading voice, and there aren't any other voices to kind of pull her back. AOC, you brought up how savvy she is, and she is. She actually looks, and I know she's crazy, she actually looks fairly reasonable compared to some of the Ayanna Pressley types and things like that. Maybe it's just a party that's taken over by young women with mental illness.
I don't know, but no one's reining them in. And you know, the podcast with Newsom, he sounded like a Republican. It was crazy. And I was like, where have you been for the past 10 years? Like, why have you not reined in your party? No one is stepping up, like you said, to kind of say, listen, that's not exactly what we should be doing right now. You're missing the mark. But it doesn't seem like anybody is stepping in. Maybe Newsom will. I don't know.
You know, don't you think, now you're more familiar with Newsom than I am, because I think maybe you still live out there, at least one time you did. Don't you think that filthy snake Because I saw some of that podcast you're talking about. Don't you think he's just being the ultimate chameleon, getting ready to run for president in 2028, trying to act like, I'm not one of these crazy California Democrats who wants to trans your dog. I'm just kind of a middle-of-the-road guy with too much hair gel. I'm one of you. Don't you get that act?
Yeah, I mean, if you heard that podcast, you couldn't tell him as any different from a kind of moderate conservative. You know, Kirk is giving him advice, and he's like, yeah, 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 and I get it, and yeah, we've got issues there, like with BLM and that scam, and 80-20 issues, like men and women's sports, where 80% of the country is with conservatives. And he keeps saying to Kirk, like, you're right. But like I said, every Democrat in the House voted to reject the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. So where has he been? He completely threw Kamala under the bus and said that ad was disastrous, where Trump had said, you know, Kamala's for they, them, and Trump is for you. He admitted that totally killed her. He said he's against the pronoun stuff and condemned the Latinx terminology. He's like, oh, we never said that in my office. We never use pronouns. I don't know where that came from. And I was like, where was he the whole time? Why didn't he speak up? So to your point, he's either secretly a Republican, or what I think is more true, he's a grifter, like most Democrats, who's strategically trying to rebrand himself in anticipation for a national election and distract people from his disastrous leadership of the state I called home, you're right, for 20 years, which I left about a year and a half ago. And I saw it before my very eyes, just destroyed. So I agree with you. I think he's trying to, you know, rebrand himself from particularly coming off of the disaster of the wildfires.
Is he the answer for them? It's hard to imagine that a California Democrat, not to disparage California, which, as you know, I love, is he the answer for Democrats in 2028 to try to, you know, calm the storm? Or is it going to be a Gretchen Whitmer type who kind of has, you know, the MILFy thing going? Or is it a J.B. Pritzker? I think he's kind of fat, which is relatable. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know who they're going to put forth, to be honest. If people fall for Newsom, and the thing is, they fell for him for the past 5 years, right? He kind of does this rebranding thing, and I don't know if it is the hair gel and the flammable forehead, but he does rebrand himself, and people seem to have a short memory. So he may very well pull this off. I mean, he is more camera savvy. You know, he did do that debate with DeSantis, and whether you agreed with him or not, he kind of held his own, even though I thought DeSantis won that debate. And he's a savvy politician. I don't think anybody else really has this. Maybe Gretchen Whitmer. One, she's a woman, and we all know how they love their identity politics. But, you know, I don't think they have a strong person right now. They're really going to have to build them up from now going forward for the next couple of years.
What do you think of J.D. Vance? I've been so impressed. I liked him before. I just wasn't that familiar with him. I'm very impressed so far.
Yeah, I've always loved him. I mean, from the moment I read Hillbilly Elegy, and I just, you know, what's funny is the left embraced him. They loved him when he first came out with that book, right? And then all of a sudden, he's a Republican and they hate him. They just can't see beyond anything but a political party. He's very intelligent. He's got like the quintessential American story. His wife is Indian. They should be celebrating this, and yet they can't stand him. I've always enjoyed him. I know people that know him firsthand, and from what I hear, he's just a down-to-earth guy. And I think he can speak off the cuff. I think Democrats have a hard time doing that. Charlie Kirk in that podcast, he called the Democrat Party all but a bunch of pansies, and he said they're not masculine. And what he was talking about is this new media that J.D. Vance and Trump got both really good at, because they can riff. And I took a quote down from Kirk. Let me read it to you, because I think it so well encapsulates the Democrats' problem and highlights J.D. Vance's strengths, is that if you want to earn the respect of forgotten America, you have to show them that you can intellectually joust with no script, no hard breaks like you do, no producers in your ears, no teleprompters. And that's where media is going. People have to be able to trust you, what you're saying. And when you when you have a position that's based on first principles, it's easy to tell the truth. You don't have to know what the current trend is or what people want to hear. You tell the truth all the time so you come across as authentic. And I think JD has that skill. Trump earned that skill over the past few years. And that's where we just kind of spank the left, is in new media.
I'll take it. Jennifer, come back soon. All right. We're not quite done yet. We'll be back.
The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe. And I am beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality. From Gaza to Little Village to Altgeld and all over the country, the children are all ours, every single one of them, and it is our duty to fight for them.
It's wild how often those words and words like that come out of the mouths of these dirty commie scum. The children are ours. The children belong to us. Every child belongs to us. It's something they routinely talk about. And if you're not paying attention, if you don't understand what they're saying, you don't realize what they're actually saying. Joining me now, my friend Adam Coleman wrote a wonderful book, The Children We Left Behind. I would highly recommend you pick up that book. It's about Western society, Western culture, and how we've really left the kids. We've justified people just leaving the kids. Adam, I hear it all the time from the leftists. All the time, there are children. They belong to all of us. Can you explain why they talk like this so often?
I think, well, for one, some of them are just virtue signaling. Many of them don't actually know what it's like to be a parent. Often you'll see the childless woman who's standing up there, and it's not to say that she doesn't have some sort of empathy or doesn't care about children, but I think it's misplaced. And it's something that a lot of people don't bring up. People who speak like that often come from tumultuous childhood homes. So whereas when they were a kid, they wish that others would come and rescue them, then they grow up to want to rescue other people. A lot of people do that with animals as well. They turn their life into rescuing something just because they wish they were rescued when they were younger. So the whole, we must be responsible for all children, sometimes is a plea for help from when they were kids themselves. But unfortunately, ideology takes form and brings it into a more malicious arena.
Let's talk about the nuclear family, because this is something that communists have been after since the start of communism. And the Soviet Union was infamous for this, breaking up and infiltrating the nuclear family. The Stasi they'd plant pornography in a husband's mailbox so the wife would find it. In modern day times, Black Lives Matter had it on their website that they wanted to break up the nuclear family. They're quite honest about it. Why?
Because there's strength within the nuclear family. Family separation, for one, I think someone who wants to purposefully break up families is demonic. That's a different direction. But I would say that there's strength within a family. There are so many things that are beneficial for children coming from both sides, the mother and the father. There's a balance between them. Men have a different approach than women when it comes to raising children. And then what we're seeing in the West is that more and more men are either choosing to step away from their children or being forced away from their children, whether it be through the court system or through a confrontational mother. And then what ends up happening is the children pay the cost of it. The children are the ones who are lost. They're the ones who are being left behind. They're the ones who are being taken advantage of. So for many of these kids that they claim to want to claim as theirs, and many of these leftist kids who gravitate towards this leftist ideology that makes the community's responsibility to take care of them because their parents failed to do so, then they get wrapped up in this because they don't have any sort of protection from it. Meanwhile, for like someone like my son, you know, when, especially during 2020, when all this stuff popped off, he could turn to me and ask me, just like your kids can turn to you and ask you, and you keep them from dangerous and illogical ideologies that are manipulative.
Adam, I understand a bit about your background, so obviously this is something that maybe you will understand better than I will, but can you help me understand the mentality of a father walking away from his children? Because I fully admit that I'm a terrible person. I would never claim to be a moral person, but gosh, I love being a dad. It's just like the greatest thing in the world. It's not coming to work. It's not, you know, eating a great meal. It's not, and I love all those things, right? When I walk in the door and my two meathead sons come running to talk to me and tell me about their day, there's nothing better in the world. I don't understand how someone wouldn't like it. It's like not liking ice cream. Can you explain it?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a little bit complicated. I think there are multiple situations as to why it happens. One of them is, well, when they were kids, their father stepped away. So it's just repeating familiar behavior. The other part of it is, for some reason, they didn't bond with their children when they were first born, which is incredibly important to do so. You know, for mothers, they have a natural bonding because the child is growing within them. But for men, they have to, that's what you see, like skin-to-skin contact for newborns. Like, they have to have that in the very beginning. They have to be close to them. That's the bonding phase, and that's the part that really solidifies your relationship with your child. You get to feed them. They become reliant on you. It's a completely different perspective. And for some men, you know, they're not choosing to walk away. They're forced to, they're kind of pushed away. Although I will always be harder on the parents and say you should keep fighting for your kids, no matter what the hurdles are in front of you. So I think it's multifaceted. I think when it comes to my father, who wasn't involved in our lives, I just don't think he was interested in fighting for us. I don't think he was interested in being much of a parent. And it's hard to really speak for him because I never really got a chance to ask him why he made the decisions that he'd made.
You used to be a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. You are not anymore. Can you explain why?
Yeah, I would say when I was a Democrat, I was more of a moderate. I was never a leftist. I moved away from the Democratic Party when I realized the source of information that I was receiving was heavily biased, and my understanding of the right-leaning position was through a left-wing filter. So, you know, I'm an analytical person. If I'm taking in bad or misleading information, the output's going to be bad and misleading as well. It was when I broke away from the mainstream media and started taking in a variety of viewpoints, whether it be more progressive viewpoints, conservative viewpoints, libertarian viewpoints. And I wanted to understand everything and kind of come to my own conclusion. So I'm rather somewhere in the middle, depending on what the issue is. The only real position that I've completely changed was I was pro-choice, and I'm radically pro-life.
Nothing wrong with that. Why is the Democrat Party, why are they bottoming out right now? And I know it won't last forever. We talk about that all the time. But right now, I have approval rating in the low 30%. It's not just me. I'm a hyper-partisan. I'm always gonna dislike Democrats. But the normal American has completely rejected the Democrat Party. Why?
They're not relatable. They're not cool. They're not relatable in a sense that the Democrats started catering to the upper class. And so everything that they say sounds like in the interest of the upper class, sounds like they're speaking to a niche audience. And there's a lot of denialism. You know, for the person who lives in the gated community and can, you know, live in this particular bubble, everything is fine. But for everybody else, they're living check to check and have minimal savings. Life is difficult. And so when they have real problems, and then you have the upper class elitist mainstream media going out to them and asking them, well, what are the issues that are facing for you? And why are you supporting Trump? They still turn around and call them racist because that's the thing that they say in their bubble. Right, so they've completely abandoned the working class. They've completely abandoned the average American who is, you know, trying to strive for a better life. They've turned to illegal immigrants who are doing the jobs that many Americans would actually like to do, even though they perpetuate the lie that Americans don't want to do certain jobs so they can keep near slave wages, so they can keep the system going, where they can, you know, they can use our tax dollars to take care of their health care and so on and so forth. But I live in New Jersey. Down the road is a warehouse filled with illegal immigrants, multiple warehouses filled with illegal immigrants. It's an entire system. And so when people like myself are saying, hey, these problems are real, we see it every single day, do something about it, they say, it's not a problem, everything is fine, vote for Kamala. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, I used to say during Biden's presidency that the one word I would use to describe them was cold. They would tell you, you know, stop whining about inflation is essentially what they would say. Inflation's better. It's fine. What are you complaining about? The economy's better. You just don't realize it yet. You're too dumb to realize it. It seems to have infected their entire party. They just don't care. We're always lectured.
Yes. And this is the, we saw this during COVID, the falling in love with the academic, the falling in love with the expert, right? The expert can't be wrong, even though the expert keeps changing his mind every other week about what the conclusion is, right? It's this idea that the opinion of the average American doesn't matter. And that's the part that's disheartening. And that's the reason why a lot of people went in the direction of Donald Trump. And don't get me wrong, Donald Trump is a billionaire, but at least he's real, right? No one's ever said that Donald Trump is fake. We all believe he's real. And he actually echoes many of the things that we're saying. Whether he does it or not is a different story, because politicians are politicians. But he's at least hearing us. And you can't say that from much of the Democratic Party, especially on the national level.
Yeah, it's true. Adam, my brother, thank you. Best of luck on your book. I'm sure it'll sell well. All right. We're not done yet. Hang on. Obviously, we're talking about the death of the Democrat Party, but the Democrat Party is not dead. It's still there, and it will be there. But in its current form, as we've just talked about for the last hour, I believe it is dead. And there was a lot of brilliant stuff we heard from people during this show, but I really love what Adam Coleman said about how they just talk down to everybody now, and they don't seem to be able to get out of that until they figure out a way to break out of this academia bubble where they consider themselves to be the kings and queens, the professors, and we're, of course, the students, the morons. So let me lecture you on everything. Until they find a way to break out of that, they may very well be in the wilderness. You and I like to believe that it's all ideological, right? That they got run out of power because of all the LGBTQ stuff. And, of course, that's partially true. But the truth is there's no ability like relatability. And as long as Democrats run to the camera and tell you you should stop whining about inflation, they're going to lose. Let's celebrate that. Let's enjoy it. And let's make some gains while we can. All right. We'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.